blowjob up. Blowjob up.
Welcome, my friends, to the Moon Jockeys podcast. An in-depth discussion of Star Wars themes, characters, and storylines. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to another episode of Moon Jockeys Podcast. My name is Brian, your host. You may know our guest from Star Wars The Saga Continues. How are you doing tonight, Tim?
Hey, what's up, Brian? Doing good. Thanks for having me on your podcast. It's really cool to finally chat with you after all these years, because I know you're one of our very early listeners when we first started the podcast going in 2012. And if I remember, I probably the first listener we had interact with us on the show through email or Twitter response. So yeah, we've been communicating with you through our show for, you know, almost 6 years now. So the fact to finally get the chance to talk to you is really cool. So thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. I really enjoy your show. And it's kind of weird that time flies so fast. Like,
yeah, you got that right.
I knew you were somebody I wanted to talk to about tonight's topic because you have a serious passion for clones and stormtroopers in general. Can you talk to me about what it is you love about the clones?
Yeah, just as a kid watching Star Wars, the original trilogy for the first time, there was something that stood out to me about the cool-looking helmets and armor with the stormtroopers throughout the original trilogy. And this, you know, I haven't talked too much about my Imperial fandom a lot too much on The Saga Continues and where that all came from, but it just felt like drew to the cool-looking designs of a lot of the characters in The Empire. And almost to a point where I know George Lucas kind of said he wanted to have, you know, the stormtroopers feel like almost, you know, they have no soul. There's like nobody in there. It's like these faceless soldiers doing the Emperor's bidding. And like, you don't feel too much sympathy for them during battle, but I kind of felt the opposite as a kid. Always, you know, you can't see the person behind that face. And, you know, who was that person just got shot there or is missing all the targets? So I took more of a sympathy on them growing up. But then when we got to the prequels and Attack of the Clones came out, we got, you know, our first tease in the teaser trailer about showing the clone troopers and all. Oh, this is, you know, the origins of the stormtroopers I love so much in the original trilogy. And then seeing them play out in episode 2 and just how awesome they were. I mean, they quickly just blew the stormtroopers out of the water when it comes to, you know, what they could do. And just my fandom for troopers elevated even more with the clones, and they stayed at the top of my list. I mean, because it all stemmed from just the cool looking designs that troopers had. But man, once we get to the clones and then with the Clone Wars series and the personalities they had, the characters that were introduced through the show, and you get to see more of the troopers behind those cool-looking helmets. I mean, that's what sets the clones apart from all the rest of the troopers throughout the Star Wars saga. So that's kind of where it all began, and just how it continues throughout the Clone Wars. Just with each new arc and story that focused on the clones, this makes me appreciate them even more, and just really has become one of my favorite aspects of Star Wars. I mean, my favorite is the Force and everything surrounding that with the Jedi. But then after that, it's probably the story about the clones and this kind of the tragic stories that they have in the course of the saga and what role they play to the events that transpired. So yeah, the clones are just really took like it to them starting with episode 2, but Clone Wars took it to a whole nother level with my fandom for clone troopers.
Yep. You're the perfect guy to talk about tonight. Yep. So we're going to do things a little bit out of order tonight, just because we have something special. There was a special announcement, and we will save that in the polls till like the end of the episode. So let's get into the Protocol 66 arc. The 4 episodes are The Unknown, Conspiracy, Fugitive, and Orders. And they were the first 4 episodes of The Lost Missions, and that's what we're going to call Protocol 66 arc tonight. You have a tragic incident where Tup actually kills a Jedi. He kind of goes crazy, and he starts saying good soldiers follow orders and kill the Jedi repeatedly, like it's a mantra that he just, all of a sudden, a switch flips, and he has this compulsion to kill the Jedi. So when we talk about this arc, I kind of want to talk about some of the themes that I pulled out of it. And the first theme that I saw is kind of a repeat theme that I've seen in Five's entire arc, or the Domino Squad arc as a whole. If you look at all the episodes together, there's a major theme of identity. Like you were saying, when George first had the original trilogy, he thought of the stormtroopers as this masked, faceless troopers that you don't really care about. But in the Clone Wars, they really start to put the humanity back into the clones and make you care about them, giving them personality and names. And it kind of started with Heavy and Cut Up in the Clone Cadets episode, where they got their names. 99 gave Heavy his name, and then Cut Up was given his name by Brick. And then it continued on into the Umbara arc, where instead of using their names, Pong Krell actually used their designations, the alphanumeric designations, to kind of take away their humanity and insult them a little bit. And in this arc, there's a wonderful conversation between Fives and AZ.
Hello.
What's going on?
CT-5385's condition seems to be deteriorating.
Tup. His name is Tup.
Tup? What is a Tup?
Tup is my friend. He's not a number.
Yes, he is. We all have numbers. My number is AZ345211896246498721347. His number is CT5385.
Wrong. He has a name. No clone uses a number. Not anymore.
But you are a number. CT5555.
No. I am Fives. Call me Fives.
But Five is a number.
No, not five. Fives.
Oh. The difference is minimal.
Not to me. And not to any clone.
What did you think about that in this arc and the overall theme?
Yeah, you bring a great point, where that theme of identity and their names is, you know, sprinkled throughout the course of the stories we get with Domino Squad. And I totally agree with about that conversation Fives had with AZ. I mean, there's little moments like that is what I love about the Clone Troopers. And again, why I think they're a great part of Star Wars, because we never really got too much of that type of storytelling before about these creations that, you know, droids are out there in the galaxy, you know, but we never had like these, you know, actual humans that are kind of referred to the same way as droids by some people. It was Fives and AZ had that conversation there. I just love how, you know, AZ can't put a distinction between when Five tells him, you know, it's Fives. Oh, that's the same as a number. Like, no, not five, Fives. And just how important it is to the clones and just all of them, how that's why they take these different names, to show that they're all just not the same person, that they do have their own identities in there. I love that line that Fives said to AZ at the end, it goes, not to me and not for any clone. You just really get that sense of, you know, how important identity is to all the clone troopers. And even though they can't focus on every single trooper in the Clone Wars and in the Republic Army, the ones we do focus on throughout the series, you really get that point stressed out a lot. It just makes them more, you know, interesting and compelling characters when you see that they're just not these, you know, troopers that all look the same and have all the same personality. Because even amongst, you know, casual people who watch Star Wars, or even before they even see the Clone Wars, I even heard too from like in other aspects of fandom how, you know, oh, like there's really no sympathy for the clones, kind of going back to the stormtrooper thing. They're all the same person, so you really don't feel bad when one gets shot or whatever, or there's the stakes aren't high enough in like these battles with droids versus clones. But when you watch Clone Wars and episodes like the Protocol 66 arcs, you just see right away that that is just not the case. I mean, and then you go back to Umbara too, and that was a big thing for it. So how it just really shows you that these are real, like, soldiers with different personalities, that you do feel sad in the loss when one of them does get killed in battle or in other circumstances. So it just did a great job of really driving home that point of identity for all the clones. It just makes you care about them even more so.
It kind of goes back to the very first episode with Ambush, and when Yoda's talking to the clones in that quiet moment in the cave or whatever, when he asked them to remove their buckets, and they're kind of like, there's not much to see here, sir, because we all have the same face. We're all genetic clones, so we practically feel the same way. And then Yoda goes on to talk about how each clone is different, because basically they have different life experiences that molds them in different ways. It kind of goes into the nature versus nurture thing. And because they have those different life experiences, they take on different personality traits and character. Like, I think that it's kind of a very cool thing that they've done in this little cartoon to bring the humanity into the clones and to make them like more significant. And the way that they actually distinguish different clones from one another with hairstyles and tattoos and colors is pretty helpful when you're looking at a bunch of people with all the same voice. I mean, it's very hard to tell them apart if you're just going off of the voice, because Dee Bradley Baker, of course, voices most of them. But they actually do distinguish them with like tattoos or different armor decorations. You know what I mean?
Totally. And even with Dee Bradley Baker doing the voice for all the clones, I think got to give him major props for it. Even though, you know, his voice is, you know, is the same for all the clone troopers, he does a great job of bringing out different types of like tonal inflections of how they talk, just to make them stand out as well. I mean, I think the Umbara arc is a perfect example of that, where you know, Fives and Rex have so many conversations, and then you don't even realize it's like the same person doing the voice, like talking to himself type of thing. Their personalities are different, and he brings that different tone inflections across throughout his performance, where it is two separate people with, you know, different ideas, different personalities talking to each other, yet they have the same voice, but at the same time, you don't think about it at all. So Dee Bradley Baker did a great job of too, just distinguishing the different clone troopers in his performance as well.
It's kind of cool that Fives gives AZ his own name, even though he's just a droid, because AZ, of course, says a designation that's uber long, and he's just shortens it to AZ. To kind of give him a little humanity, I guess, a personalization. Can I ask you a question? Do you know how you got the name Tim?
Yeah, it's pretty simple, actually, because I got three brothers. I'm the middle child, and the parents, my parents named my older brother after my dad. My older brother's name is Sal, my dad's name is Sal, and my grandfather's name is Sal. And so for me, being the second child born, they decided to do the same thing, except for on my mom's side. Her father is named Tim, and my uncle, my mom's brother, is named Tim. So kind of carrying on the first name tradition amongst the family members, but taking one from each side, from my dad's side and then from my mom's side. But then for my younger brother, I guess I kind of ran out of family names. He just got a new name to start off with, but me and my brother are both named after our grandparents.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. That's like a family legacy. So my name is Brian, of course, and my name is based off of some complications my mom had at childbirth. I was born in the 70s, and back then it was totally different than it is now. Like, they didn't really know that I was a breech baby until like labor, which is kind of odd today. So they ended up having to do an emergency C-section. And when I came out, I had my umbilical cord wrapped around my neck. And so like back then in the 70s, it was fairly common if a baby had the umbilical cord wrapped around the neck that the baby would die. So my mom thought that the fact that I survived birth, coming out breech with that I showed a lot of strength. And so she gave me the name Brian because it means strength. And that's kind of where that came from. And that's like one of the things that my mom reminded me of in our final moments together before she passed away. She's like, always remember that you have a great strength about you. which is why we named you Brian. So I think that our names can be like a blessing and sort of giving us kind of a legacy to live up to. And I think our parents, well, kind of take it seriously. I mean, I took it seriously when I named my daughter, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy the way you think about the different stories and big meaning that your name can have and where it comes from throughout, you know, the different experiences that your parents had and what they want to pass on. So, yeah, each name has its own story, or the origin of your name has its own story, which is kind of fascinating to think about. But to be honest, I don't have any kids of my own, but what if I did? I think the first thing I'd probably go to is Star Wars names. Something I always thought about. You know, Luke is probably top on the list for a name if I were to have a kid that was a boy. So I don't know if I'm going to continue with my family traditional legacy of naming after, you know, other family members. It's going to go straight to Star Wars.
Well, just make sure your wife is on board with that. So
yeah. Or if not, I gotta do a lot of convincing.
The next theme I saw in this arc is the thing that Tup kept saying is good soldiers follow orders, and why that is so important for clones, and the conspiracy behind the biochip, the inhibitor biochip. Like, just how this unravels, it's a very, very cool sort of cloak and dagger mystery episodes where Fives and AZ are just trying to figure out what is going on and what happened to Tup and how deep that goes. I love how that the new information is unraveled in these episodes. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah. It's kind of cool when you think about it. We're going into it and watching it for the first time. We all know as Star Wars fans where it's going to lead. But yet at least for me anyway, I was just so engrossed with the story to finally get the answers of, you know, the origins of Order 66 and how it all came about and how it actually worked. Because we haven't got that, I believe, during that time in the new canon of just how it all went down and the, you know, science behind it. Because before, like in other EU stories, I think there were other examples of how it all worked. At the same time, I knew those always weren't like official unless it came from Lucas and he said the story that he wanted to tell of the origins for anything. And for this case, I would always wonder, okay, what was it? You know, was it something that was in their brains like a chip, or was it something that the clones always knew about and they were just waiting for the order to, you know, to execute Order 66. Once Chancellor Palpatine said execute Order 66, do they go, oh, okay, this is it. The time has finally come to do that. But so when I watched this episode, I just couldn't wait to finally get that answer of how it all works and how it all goes down. So even though we know the outcome that Order 66 is going to happen, to finally get these answers through these episodes and, you know, the breakdown of how it all works was just really, really cool. And it just kept me, you know, interested, obviously, it is so captivated within these four episodes, even though we knew the outcome where it was leading. So just a great job of the writing and storytelling, I think, being done in these four episodes to tell that story.
It's kind of cool that it goes back to what George laid the groundwork with in Attack of the Clones. They tell Obi-Wan that they were given an inhibitor chip to make them more docile so that they would follow directions. And that inhibitor chip is actually also what carries Protocol 66. We also learned that Count Dooku's conversation with Lama Su, that it's basically Protocol 66 is a safeguard against the betrayal from rogue Jedi, is the lie that they told the Kaminoans as to why they needed it in there. But that little Protocol 66 is basically how Palpatine coordinates a military coup across the galaxy all at once.
Yeah, I mean, that scene, seeing it for the first time where they talked to Dooku, that was a pretty big revelation I felt at the time. I was like, oh man, so, you know, the Kaminoans, they're actually speaking with Dooku here. They think he's a Jedi who's behind it, where they don't realize he's a Sith and all that. So that was just another layer to the story of how Order 66 and the protocol that worked was that when I saw it for the first time, I'm like, oh man, this is really interesting and fascinating, just how, you know, who's involved with all this and the role that the Kaminoans played in it and how much they knew about it. So it was all very interesting seeing it play out. And that was one of the first moments that kind of took me by surprise in the Sarek. That was some new information that I wasn't expecting to get.
It's very shady because they actually call him like Lord Tyrannus, as opposed to Count Dooku. So they use his Sith title.
Because at least the way I think about it is how they don't know, you know, obviously that he's a Sith and that Tyrannus is a Sith title, but they know that Count Dooku is the leader of the Separatist army. So that would probably kind of throw him off course as far as like the leader of the Separatists is, you know, behind the creation of the enemy he's fighting against. So yeah, it's funny to think about like all the secrecy and like games that Dooku and Sidious had to play just to keep their cover up, and you know, it all worked out in the end for Palpatine. But yeah, it's just crazy to think about all the stuff that had to go down to, you know, trick everyone, a lot of people in the galaxy for Palpatine's plan to go through.
But the Kaminoans are definitely not above trying to hide any secrecy, like get rid of any evidence of the biochip.
Yeah.
So like they're all about killing Tup and killing Fives.
Yeah.
They're faulty.
I gotta say, especially for Nala Se, the like head medical leader in Kamino, you know, from Attack of the Clones, you got the sense from, especially from Lama Sot and Chuan Wei, like that pride they felt to the army they created and how special they were. And to see another Kaminoan just kind of disregard him as like they say it multiple times throughout the course of the arc, you know, just property and just, you know, property of the Kaminoans or property of the Republic, just not giving them the time of day or like viewing them as anything more than that. Which, you know, as someone who, like I said, at episode two, saw them have great respect and pride for the clones, I'm sure they still do, but it seems like that wasn't the case for all Kaminoan and this one, especially Nala Se, which is kind of disappointing for me to see, especially as a fan of both the clones, especially, but even Kamino and the Kaminoans for the role they played in creating them a little bit.
Once Fives and AZ discover the chip in Tup right before he dies, they start to try to figure out how many of them have the chip and when do they get the chip. They find out that basically the chips are implanted at stage 3 embryo, so that all clones have the biochips. And then so Fives takes out the biochip in himself because he doesn't want to have that.
Master Jedi, I know what's going on. I have the evidence. The Jedi instructed that inhibitor chips be implanted in us at birth, but Tup's malfunctioned. That's what made him lose control.
Where is the evidence?
I have it right here. As you can see, the chip taken from Clone Trooper Tup is black and rotting, indicating a malfunction of some sort.
What caused the malfunction?
It doesn't matter. The fact is, Tup's chip malfunctioned, and it drove him insane. These chips have to be removed. Otherwise, the entire Republic army could be compromised.
There is no proof of that. This is an isolated incident. Besides, when you removed Trooper Tup's chip, he died.
Well, that's not going to happen to the rest of us.
And how do you know that?
Because I removed mine.
Here is Clone Trooper Five's chip. As you can see, there is no sign of malfunction in either him or the chip.
By removing your chip, you are a threat. Master Jedi, we must terminate this trooper immediately.
I am not a piece of hardware. I'm a living being.
You were created in our laboratories. You are Kaminoan property.
Correction. Technically, he is property of the Republic.
That does not change the fact that he is a danger and must be terminated.
I believe that's for me to decide. Fives, you are coming with me to Coruscant. I think it's time you told your story to the Chancellor.
Master Jedi, I beg you to reconsider.
The Chancellor wanted all the data on Tup to be sent to Coruscant. We're sending the data, the tumor, and Fives along with it.
Then I am going with you.
As you wish, Doctor.
In And so they give Shaak Ti the two biochips, the faulty one from Tup and then the one from Fives. And that's where my frustration with Shaak Ti comes to a head.
Oh, you're not alone in that, Brian.
Oh, I just, the thing, it's just so frustrating that I guess we've gotten the impression that she is a student of war. Like, she may be one of the Jedi that studied war but during times of peace before the Clone War started. Because she says that unity is what wins wars. In the Cadets arc, or the Cadets episode. Mm-hmm. So, like, she's someone that knows what is good in battle. Yet she's given this evidence of a bigger plot. And she doesn't think about who may have be behind the plot. She just takes it directly to the Chancellor. She trusts blindly. And because of that, she basically takes the evidence back to the person that is going to hide it. And so the Jedi Council never see the evidence and can investigate what's on the chip or to discover Protocol 66. I mean, if they had taken it to the Jedi Temple and examined it to figure out what was on the chip, they could have avoided Order 66.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's what makes it worse is that, see, right now I'm trying to remember exactly, because I believe this was in the second episode, it might have been the second or third one, but I'm pretty sure it's the second one of the arc, where they're talking in, you know, the room where Tup is at, and they're discussing about, I'm trying to remember if they're talking about bringing Tup back to the Chancellor, or is it the chip they took out? So I'm trying to remember what exactly the sequence of events that played out, but she did say that she was going to bring it back to the Jedi Council when Nala Se was saying she has orders to bring it directly to the Chancellor, but then Shaak Ti wasn't going to have that. She wanted to take it to the Jedi Order first. So it was like she had the right idea at first, but then when Fives later on in that moment has both chips as evidence, then she changes her mind and goes, agrees to take it directly to the Chancellor. So that just makes it more frustrating. It's like, Shaak Ti, what are you doing? Why did you change in that instance right there?
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, it's like the Palpatine's once again the puppet master and just pulling the strings of everyone to do his bidding. And I believe they were talking about Tup's chip that had been retrieved. And they ended up like switching out that chip with a false chip to kind of hide the evidence. But Fives found it. He went back into the room and found the actual faulty chip. So that's where they got that from, but it's just, they get so close. And in the final episode, they take Fives back to the Chancellor and the evil of him just, asking to be alone with Fives in a room where he can like actually tell him that he's right in what he's going to do. Like, the betrayal and the frustration of this is the person with the most power in the entire galaxy and seeing a plot that he's doing to try to kill the Jedi, like, that would kind of drive someone mad, and it kind of does.
No, yeah, totally. You put that, and getting that information plus what Nala Se injected him with before he reached Coruscant, so, like, the mixture, like, of both of those is... No wonder Fives was just so confused and acted the way he did once he got that information from Palpatine. But at the same time, man, this shows the confidence that Palpatine has in his plan, and knowing that he could pretty much tell the biggest secret in the galaxy that in his plans to so openly to a clone trooper. But yet it plays right into the story he wants to play out to, you know, Shaak Ti and the rest, like that he's under attack from Fives, and Fives is just crazy. And like, how crazy does that sound? That but the Chancellor orchestrated this whole thing to take down the Jedi. Nobody's going to believe that coming from a clone who's already, you know, showing some side effects thanks to the injection Nala Se gave to him. Mm-hmm. So it just all played out perfectly to Palpatine's plan. But that's, again, just as a viewer, as a fan, just gets to, you know, just go like, oh, what could have been, just how close the Jedi came to, you know, avoiding Order 66. It was all right there. Fives was the one that was going to lay it all out there. So again, it makes for captivating storytelling, but at the same time, it just makes you go, oh, what could have, the Jedi just weren't, you know, so self-centered, not real, seeing what's right in front of them. It just makes it frustrating, but at the same time, this really kind of cool to see play out, knowing where it leads in Revenge of the Sith and just how Palpatine orchestrates things. I mean, as evil as he is, he, I always say this a bunch of times too, just the plans he laid out during the Clone Wars to get everyone to be a Revenge of the Sith is just genius. You gotta give him props for that. This was kind of another example of him showing that type of thinking.
Why do you think Fives asked for Rex and Anakin in when he talks to, I think it was Jesse in the bar?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Jesse or Kix. I think it was Kix. But
okay.
It's one of those two. Yeah. But the reason I think he went to Anakin and Rex is, you know, that's probably the closest relationship he has to in regards to, I think, both the Jedi and the clone. And of course, they were fighting together already at the beginning of the Sorokon or Ringo Vendi. And, but just his experience he's had with Rex going back all the way to the rookie storyline and getting that respect there. And then I think just what they went through on Umbara just kind of strengthened their bond even more so. And they probably became like really close after that experience that they went through. So I think, you know, Rex would be the one clone that he would really trust more than any other, probably after once Echo died,
yeah,
or presumed to be dead at that time. But yeah, after that, I think Rex would probably be the closest one he would have as a friend there. And then Anakin's probably the Jedi he spent the most time working with, I would believe, too. So that just thinks those two are the ones he could trust the most with this, and that's why he wanted to go with those two.
Yeah, it's such a powerful scene, seeing where he's trying to get them to understand what he knows and explain it. But even though he doesn't really understand it fully, he just gets a glimpse. But it's another vision that the Jedi don't really investigate that much. I mean, Anakin hears it, but I don't think he really tries to investigate it. They just kind of blow it off and say that Fives was a little brainwashed by separatists or whatever.
Mm.
But we do know that at least Rex took it seriously, because Rex actually took out his own chip.
Yeah. And even though he didn't really say much in that moment, I think you can kind of see in his facial expressions there when Fives is saying that, that something, like Rex is seeing that he might be onto something here, where it's not, oh, he's just going crazy at this moment here, more so than Anakin did. Like, I definitely agree what you were saying about Anakin, how he was kind of just kind of, you know, rubbing it off as something that was not truthful, especially when you take in consideration how close Anakin is to the Chancellor Palpatine at that moment, too. It would probably be something you wouldn't think to believe right away. Whereas Rex, I think, kind of had a little more bit of having an open mind to what Fives was saying there, to investigate it more, to something really being true that he's saying right there, which we know that it is. But I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see if we get to see Rex do that eventually, and whether in some of the new Clone Wars episodes we're going to get next year, if they're going to explore that at all, especially by the time we get to Siege of Mandalore, because we know that's during the time where Order 66 goes down, and Rex definitely doesn't go through with it. So I wonder if we'll maybe get that there or something beforehand. But I do hope, even if it's not in those new episodes, I think it'd be a great story to see, even if it's in a like short comic series of Rex, Gregor, and Wolf removing their Order 66 or their inhibitor chips, and just, you know, the reasoning that really made them believe, you know, for Rex, I could see after what he went seeing Fives here, and like I just said, how close they were, I could see Rex kind of really doing it on his own as far as believing what Fives said. But in order to have Gregor and Wolf do it, I kind of want to see, you know, what really makes them either believe Rex or see for themselves what the potentially could go down if they don't remove it. So I think it's a really fascinating story for those three clones to see how that all unfolded and when they remove their chips.
I think that there's something that Tup and Five say as they're dying that makes Rex believe everything
that's
that they're
point.
Saying.
Yeah.
So like as Tup and Fives die, they talk about the end of the nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the inhibitor chip basically gives them nightmares at night where they are killing Jedi.
I just need you to listen to me. Please. I'm not really sure we have any other choice.
I was framed because I know the truth. The truth about a plot. A massive deception.
By whom?
Well, there's a sinister plot in the works against the Jedi. I have proof of it. I can prove that everything that I know is true beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Show me the evidence.
The evidence is in here. It's in here. It's in all of us. Every clone.
What is it?
Organic chips built into our genetic code to make us do whatever someone wants. Even kill the Jedi. It's all in here.
Let's just get you some help first. Then we can review everything. It'll be okay, Fives. We'll sort this out.
You don't believe me!
We're closing in on the target. Everyone get ready.
Fives, we are listening to you. We only want to help.
How do I know you're not tricking me? How do I know it won't be a trap? The Chancellor would try to kill me. I promise you that.
The Chancellor?
He's in on it. I don't know to what extent, but I know he orchestrated much of this. He told me in the medical bay.
He told you? When you tried to assassinate him? You have gone too far, Fives. The Chancellor is incapable of what you claim.
He is! I swear to you, General, you have no idea.
Stand down, soldier! Stand down! Get on your knees!
No, no, no! Stay back!
Don't do it, soldier! Get away from me!
What? No! Fives!
Get this ray shield off!
Fives. Brother. Call for help! We need a medic!
Rex. Fives. This. It's bigger than any of us. Than anything I could have imagined. I never meant to. I only wanted to do my duty. Brother.
Fives. Stay with me, Fives. Fives!
The mission. The nightmares. They're finally over. Fives. No, Fives. Come on, Fives.
Don't go. Stay with me. Stay with me. Fives. Fives. Don't go.
I think that's what triggers in Rex, that this is something that should really be investigated because it's causing bad things in their lives that all the clones experience.
Yeah, that's a great point, Civil War. It makes total sense of that being the case and why they really wouldn't speak up on it. And even Rex, as you mentioned, taking that to heart even more so, hearing that from Fives as he died. And again, I'm going back to the Umbara arc where Rex even questions, like, one of the last lines of that story arc is like, what's the point of all this of fighting in this war? So he kind of has that doubt already. And if he has kind of what your theory is, let's say that is accurate, where that is a nightmare that most clones have. And when Rex hears that, knows that he's not alone. But then you go back to that already, the kind of doubt he's having with this war beforehand, it would just play right into why he would be really either looking into this situation even more so to make him remove the inhibitor chip, or just seeing Fives right there and kind of connecting the dots and going with what he's feeling in previous events to have him remove the chip without looking into it that much further. So both ways, it just makes sense that Rex would really take to heart to what Fives was saying there in that expression of the nightmare is finally over. So yeah, I do like that idea of far that being the reasoning for it.
Yeah. How would the saga be different if Shaak-Ti had taken the biochips to the Jedi Council instead of Chancellor Palpatine?
Man, like you said, it could have changed things really drastically. It makes me think that's like a Star Wars Infinity comic story. I don't know if you've read those, where it's like
alternate universe. Yeah.
Like one little thing happened here that changed certain situations. So I can see that happening here, where they take the inhibitor chips to the Jedi Order and they realize, you know, what's behind it. And then they go arrest Chancellor Palpatine, kind of do what they do in Revenge of the Sith, but maybe they take other Jedi like Anakin and Obi-Wan there, who could, you know, put up more of a fight than the other Jedi did. But then even if Palpatine got the upper hand, like he did in Revenge of the Sith, because there could have been something where they wouldn't be able to activate Order 66. Maybe the Jedi would have done something with the clones, removed the inhibitor chips before they confronted Palpatine. Yeah. So things could have been totally different. But at the same time, too, I think as well as how clouded the Jedi were at this time with the dark side being involved in the war. Mm-hmm. Would their, you know, sense of, you know, the living force and just the light side be able to realize that what's going on, or would they make a decision because of the cloud of the dark side surrounding them, where they wouldn't be able to either recognize what the inhibitor chip actually does, or just do something where they wouldn't pay too much attention to it, or figure we'll worry about that when it comes? Because they kind of do that in the beginning of or the Cyclodeus episode, right before we get to the Yoda arc, where they kind of say the clones have proven themselves time and time again to, you know, give their lives for us, to be valuable allies. So until, you know, we see anything otherwise, we'll kind of treat them the same and view them as close allies as they have been in the past. So I go two ways on it. The Jedi seeing what's actually behind the inhibitor chips, or the dark side clouding their judgment, which would make them not do anything about it. So, but the Jedi fan in me likes to think they would have made the right decision. Shaak-Ti took it to them, because if they can't see that, then man, yeah, they really deserve to be taken out by Palpatine.
Well, I mean, half the Jedi Council is in a room with Palpatine and they have no idea that he's lying to them. Like at the end of the final episode, Palpatine's throwing some bullshit up out there that it was a virus that they got on a planet, and now they're basically spending all this wasted money to inoculate all the clones from this false virus so it doesn't happen again. Yeah. And they just kind of, they eat it up. They accept it as truth. Like,
this one is like, oh, that settles in.
It's just frustrating. How does this arc change the way you see Order 66?
Man, it just makes it that much more tragic. I mean, seeing Order 66 for the first time in Revenge of the Sith, it's tragic still, you know, seeing the Jedi be betrayed like that. But man, when you see episodes of the Clone Wars, it just makes it that much more impactful. I think heartbreaking, tragic, meaningful, all those things when you see it, because you just know the faces behind some of these clones, the ones that you're seeing in the movie, like Cody and Commander Green and some other ones. Like, you know, even though it's not Commander Wolf, you know, that is one of the Wolf Packs shooting down Plo Koon there. But so, yeah, it's, and knowing, but with this arc in particular, knowing how close Fives was to exposing all this and preventing it from happening, it just makes it that much more tragic, like I said. And that Fives kind of had to give his life for this. I mean, he wasn't, like, he died unsuccessfully exposing, you know, the conspiracy behind the inhibitor chips, and the fact that, you know, he couldn't save his brothers and his Jedi comrades. And it just makes it that much more sad to see it unfold. So yeah, Order 66 was always one of my favorite sequences in Revenge of the Sith, and just in Star Wars in general, for what it means and just how it was directed, the music, the emotional impact it had. But man, with this arc and this Clone Wars in general, it just elevates that even more so to probably one of the most tragic scenes in Star Wars. So yeah, I think it didn't really, I wouldn't say change the way I see Order 66. It just enhances what I felt kind of at the beginning. This makes it even more so. Like, it elevates it to 11 in a way, the emotional impact it has when you watch it after, you know, and saw with the Clone Wars and the clones that you got to connect with and just share their experiences when you see the series as a whole. So yeah, it just elevates it even further to a really powerful sequence.
I think I feel a lot more pity on the clones with this arc, because basically the clones are acting more like droids than they are like people, where they don't have control of their own actions. It's basically like a program that they have to do. So like when I first saw Revenge of the Sith, I was kind of confused that these clones that they were entrusted to fight alongside would betray them and just kill them all of a sudden. Like that, I don't think that was explained perfectly in Revenge of the Sith because it happened so quickly. But this totally makes me have sympathy for the clones to do something that I guess is totally out of character, like at least out of character of the clones that we've gotten to know through the Domino Squad. I mean,
yeah,
they seem like pretty honorable soldiers, you know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, that's just the tragedy of it as well. I mean, seeing the Jedi die the way they did and be betrayed, but the way the clones were used by Palpatine in this war, that's what makes it even more sad as well. And you make a great point about how them kind of becoming like droids in that instance and how much they fought to be, you know, treated as actual living beings amongst those who don't view them that way. And this is kind of goes against that, you know, their argument there once they're just programmed to execute Order 66. And it's just really sad and tragic the role the clones had to play and just how manipulated they were by Palpatine without them even knowing it going like throughout the Clone Wars until Order 66 actually happened. And it kind of seems like once Order 66, you know, Palpatine gives the order and they betray the Jedi, they don't go back like feeling remorse, like, oh, what did we just do? They kind of stay kind of more like, as evil in a way, where certain comics you read, and then even a little bit through see of Revenge of the Sith, just, you know, them taking captives of like the Utapalans, and then even searching for the Wookiees, like having no remorse, like the Wookiees are dead and kind of capturing them. So it just seems like once Order 66 was triggered, it just changed the personality of the clones forever until, you know, they were pretty much decommissioned by the Emperor once they outlived their usefulness for them.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of going back to the Kanan comic where we had a clone that kind of was going against that, where he did feel a little like remorse and kind of, I forget, it's been a while since I read those comics, but he did help Kanan kind of escape a situation where he sabotaged like a ship he was on. So he kind of fought back the programming that they were having at that time. So there are instances probably where some clones would do that, but probably the majority of them, they just never went back to the way they were during the Republic fighting with the Jedi. And again, just makes it that much more heartbreaking once we got to see how the clones were in the Clone Wars and just, you know, not only good soldiers they were, but just really good people once you get down to it and you got to see the experiences they went through. So yeah, it's just a sad, you know, chain of events that went down with Order 66 all the way around.
It's kind of off topic, but you know how in the final scenes of Rebels, there's a scene where I believe it's Gregor that dies?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And before he dies, there's a moment where he just talks about fighting for a war that he believed in.
Yeah.
And that he felt like it was worth his life, as opposed to just fighting for a war for someone else. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I love that line of dialogue. I'm so glad that was in there. Just to have a little moment for the clones, because they weren't major like characters in the last few episodes of Rebels. They played a supporting role, but the fact that guy had to say going into the finale, I kind of had a bad feeling that one of the clones was going to go, either Wolf or Gregor. So it wasn't a huge shock to me that Gregor did end up dying, but I just really love the line that he had that you mentioned right there about being able to fight in the war that he believed in, and you know, he believed in it was his own choice. So that was just a great, another powerful moment. And, you know, it's kind of hard to say that it's a happy ending for a clone trooper who's dying right there, but it kind of is knowing what happened with the majority of the clones and Order 66, because not all of them got to make that choice like Rex, Gregor, and Wolf did. So it was sad that he died, but he died happy in a way and content that knowing he got to do this and kind of show his own free will that not all the clones got to be able to do.
Is a clone army superior to a droid army?
Without a doubt. I mean, Lao Tzu says it when we're explaining it to Obi-Wan in Attack of the Clones, but we get to see it firsthand, you know, why that's the case in Clone Wars. And even in Episode 2, they show kind of their superiority against the droids. But in Clone Wars, you just really see it. Not only just the training that we know they had to go through in order to go out on the front lines like we saw in Cadets. And I think even, too, with having the Jedi as their generals and, you know, the planning that they had and just I think the ways they learned strategically from the Jedi as the generals too helped them in combat as well. And just overall, I mean, the free, even though the plan was to, you know, have them be loyal, obedient soldiers, but as we know, the influence of the Jedi kind of made them some clone troopers more independent, more free thinking, and that separated them from the droid army as well. And the whole thing with the droid is, you know, they rely on, you know, superior numbers of their armies to kind of be too overwhelming for certain battles, but that's not always going to win certain battles throughout the war, as we saw in the Clone Wars, where the clones are able to think on their own, come up with their own strategies when they need to, and as we saw on Umbara, and when Fives and Reds had to come up with a bunch of different scenarios just to survive those battles, when Pong Krell was sending out knowing that they were going to die, that they would lose so many soldiers, and for them to figure out how to survive and do what they can to win those battles. It just shows you the intelligence of the clone troopers and just the battle training that they had, the influence the Jedi generals had on them. I think when you incorporate all that aspects, it just, without question, makes them superior than the droid army, even though they're sometimes going to be outnumbered.
The problem I see is that if you have clones or you have droids, neither one of them are valued as lives by the Republic. So, like, I don't think that Sidious cared about how many clones died in the battle at all.
Oh, yeah, definitely not. No.
And because they're clones, if they're defective, if they're not perfect, they're just thrown away as a bad batch. Like, they're a product that they produce as Kaminoans. And I think that the clones and the droids are just property that they don't value as a life, even though they should be. Like Yoda says that the Force is in all living beings, and so like even a clone has a unique understanding of the Force and connection to the Force. Even if they're not Force sensitive, they can quiet their minds and find peace. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, totally. I was going to say real quick, what made it so hard to see when the Umbara aren't that Pong Krell treat him the way he did, as like you were just saying, property, just numbers and all that. So that viewing them as life forms, and to see a Jedi have that type of thing. I know he was kind of corrupted already, but as the episodes were unfolding, especially in the beginning, it was just really strange to see that coming from a Jedi. And as you were saying, that is probably the attitude most in the Republic that weren't Jedi viewed the clones, whether it's senators or other political figures, you know, just viewing the clones as just, you know, more superior than the droids when it comes to battle, but yet viewing them the same as just life forms, or not viewing them as high as other life forms, but as the same as droids, where they're not losing much if, you know, when it comes to casualties. Right. So, yeah, it's just, you know, again, that goes back to my thinking of how tragic the clone story is throughout the course of the Clone Wars, and how they didn't get the respect and, you know, love that they should have gotten as living beings from most of the galaxy besides the Jedi and most of Solo's brothers. So, yeah, it's just those type of episodes like Umbara, and then when you hear others, like I said, and even in the Protocol 66 arc with the Kaminoans kind of treating them that way too, it just always sucks for me as a big clone trooper fan seeing them be regarded and treated that way in certain instances. But again, it just adds to a more compelling story with them.
Yeah, I just think that this arc gave us so much to enrich the movies, especially with the clones, because we see them in a different light because of this deeper story. And it also makes the Jedi's fall from grace that more tragic. Like, you're so close to understanding it, but you're so far because you're blind.
Yep.
I didn't understand the prequels when I first saw them. I did not understand that the Jedi Order was as flawed as it was. I thought that Yoda was just as wise in Phantom Menace as he was in Empire, and that is could not be further from the truth, you know what I mean?
Nope. Totally, yeah. At the same time, I love that progression that it takes too, that for him to go into exile. And they did a great job in the Yoda arc too, the kind of bridging the gaps I felt between the chains that Yoda has from the prequels to when we see him in Empire Strikes Back. But this makes total sense for his character to be the way he is in Empire, and the things he says in there about, you know, war does not make one great. You just know what he's talking about and the experiences he's had throughout the Clone War of why he would feel that way. So just, again, it's more great storytelling throughout Star Wars, I think, and characterizations for some of the characters we meet throughout the course of the saga. In this case that we're talking about with Yoda, I think it's just another character who benefits from, you know, certain aspects of the Clone Wars, shedding more light on certain things, like just how, you know, devastating this war was for so many people throughout the galaxy, and just how it affected and changed so many things. It's just, you know, again, awesome to see it all play out that we get to experience while watching the Clone Wars. And like you said, it just adds so much when you watch the movies. I mean, can't say how many times now that, you know, Clone Wars has been on for 10 years. We celebrated its 10th anniversary this year. Every time I see Revenge of the Sith in particular, just all the callbacks I get from different Clone Wars episodes when we see things unfold in that movie. And that's when you think about the course that the toll it took on Anakin, Obi-Wan, like I said, Yoda, the clone troopers when we see Order 66. So there's so many things you can call back on that makes you think about, you know, just certain things the characters went through and just how you just appreciate certain things that unfold throughout the course of the movie. And just, I'm using Revenge of the Sith as an example, but you could really say that for a lot of different instances throughout the course of the Star Wars saga, because the Clone Wars was just such a big event that changed the course of the galaxy. So yeah, it's just awesome that we can just get more added to the stories we already love just through the movies.
It's funny you mentioned the 10th anniversary of the Clone Wars. We had some pretty big news about a week and a half ago.
Oh, yes.
So I think we're going to get into that a little bit. We're going to talk about what is to come with the Clone Wars. And so we're going to play a little speculation warning. If you're afraid of speculation, then you might want to turn it off now and pick us up on the next episode. But we're going to talk a little bit about what's to come with the Clone Wars.
Well, as my sweet mother always said, son, if having some is good, having more is better. And having it all, well, that's just good business. Now, proceed with caution.
The name's Rex. But you'll call me Captain or Sir. War does not come with a guarantee. No soldier gets the promise of safety.
My designation is Trooper 27-5555, sir.
We call him Fives.
I'm Heavy.
This is Echo.
I'm Commander Cody, your new boss.
Sir, yes, sir!
Looks like we got ourselves a batch of shinies, Commander.
Look around. We're one and the same. Same heart, same blood. Your training is in your blood. And my blood's boiling for a fight.
So, have any idea what you've done?
This is our war.
This can't be good.
We need to pull back. Get from the portals. If we can draw them out, we can see them. If we can see them.
Rex, what's so important that you brought us all the way back here?
Hello, Master. It's been a while.
The first question I posted was, which unfinished Clone Wars arc do you hope to see in the 12 episodes? The options I gave were the Crisis on Utapau, Bad Batch, Cad Bane and Boba Fett, and Son of Dathomir. The results were Cad Bane and Boba Fett with 40% of the votes. Which of those would you want to see the most?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with the winner of those results there. Cad Bane and the Boba Fett arc. I mean, we've been teased about that for several different celebrations now. I think Dave Filoni would kind of always show something new with his concept art, and then he showed us some of the, you know, story reels from it. Was the voice acting already done, but overplayed the unfinished animation. So we've gotten teases about it, and man, it just looks so, so good the more I see about it. Seeing Boba Fett being mentored by Cad Bane and get his armor.
Yeah.
That is something I've been wanting to see ever since they introduced Boba Fett in the Clone Wars back in season 2. So Siege of Mandalore was always something that I was hoping would get done at some point, just to be a nice, you know, end cap to the series. We got the final arc that was always meant to be. That's all I really wanted. But man, once we got the announcement that we're getting 12 more episodes, that's where my head started spinning about, oh man, what are the possibilities of some of the other unfinished stories we can get once we get the new episode. So, but at the top of my list after Siege of Dathomir or Siege of Mandalore, it was a Cad Bane and Boba Fett story arc. I just think that had the potential to have some really, really cool stuff and just be a nice evolution for the character of Boba Fett that we've seen in the Clone Wars, and then transforming more into the bounty hunter that we know and love that we see in The Empire Strikes Back. So that was one that was always been high on my list.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool episode that involves a lot of bounty hunters. I think Bossk and Ara Singh were supposed to be involved with this, and
yeah.
I think maybe even Embo.
Yeah, I think you're right too about Embo. Yeah,
it would be very cool to see that one. We did have a write-in from Jim. He said, "I want to see the Dark Disciple, but I know it's unrealistic since it's already been adapted into a novel." And it was originally supposed to be 8 episodes, more realistically. I want to see Ahsoka's walkabout because it's a good connective tissue between Season 5 and Siege of Mandalore, where Ahsoka goes out on her own.
Yeah.
So that's what Jim wrote in with. We had a couple other people say that they wanted to see the Dark Disciple storyline as well. So,
yeah, I will say that would be awesome to see fully animated as 8 episodes, but kind of with what Jim is saying, I don't think that's really going to happen now that it is a novel and we do have that completed story told. So that's probably not going to be emotionless 12, but it would have been awesome because there's a lot of great moments in that novel that would have been cool to see in an actual episode.
Unfortunately, I do think that what we're going to get is the Crystal Crisis on Utapau, the Bad Batch, and then the Siege of Mandalore. The reason why I say that is Crystal Crisis on Utapau and Bad Batch have been, I don't know, let's say 75-65% already completed, where they have the pre-visualization and the voice acting recorded. So the only thing left is like the final rendering, like animation and lighting. Yeah. So to finish those episodes, it would be relatively cheap, like more affordable, because it's most of the way done. And so the only real new episodes I think we're going to get is the Siege of Mandalore. So I think we're going to get four episodes of Crystal Crisis on Utapau, the Bad Batch, and then four episodes on the Siege of Mandalore. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. I've been kind of leaning more towards that now, the more I think about it, because for all the reasons you just said there. And I'm kind of in two minds of it, but one for one is like a little disappointed where it'd be, you know, we kind of got those stories told already. We know what happens in there. So it would have been great to get, you know, some additional episodes that we haven't seen yet.
100%.
But at the same time, too, I'm thinking, well, there was some really cool stuff I love in both of those arcs, especially in Bad Batch. That I remember watching Bad Batch at Celebration Anaheim when they showed it for the first time. I go, oh man, this is awesome! An awesome sequence. How cool would it be if they actually finished this episode and this arc to see fully animated? Because it'll look amazing. And now the fact that that is going to happen, that's going to be pretty cool. So at the same time, I go, I don't want to be too greedy or nitpicky here too, because all I really wanted was the Siege of Mandalore. And the fact that we're going to get more, so I'll just take whatever they're going to get.
The Crystal Crisis on Utapau has a very important scene between Anakin and Obi-Wan around a campfire. Mm-hmm. Where Anakin kind of processes Ahsoka leaving the Jedi Order and kind of deals with that on a personal level. And it's kind of it's great acting by Matt Lanter and James Arnold Taylor. Like, I think that that's kind of important, especially before you see the Siege of Mandalore, to understand where Anakin's head is after Ahsoka leaving the Jedi Order in season 5. And then in the Bad Batch, it kind of goes back to the Domino Squad and the importance of the clones. And that's a common storyline in the Clone Wars. So I think that those are two very important arcs for the Clone Wars overall. So it kind of makes sense that that's why they were included. And the Siege of Mandalore is the finale that we've been wanting for ever since they canceled it, basically, because it just has so many like huge emotional scenes that we could see. Like, it will be pretty amazing. And so I we'll get into that in a moment. I do think that, so this is going to go on the Disney streaming platform, probably in the first year, maybe the first, like immediately when it gets released.
Yeah, I'm hoping it launches with it. Yeah, because that'd be a great thing to kind of advertise and tease to promote the streaming service that it launches with Clone Wars.
I think that since they're able to actually monetize this and they're able to get the profits of having these episodes be released, I think if it does well in the streaming service, they might actually produce another season, even though that they're doing the finale, because they have so many more arcs that they haven't completed that are already written that still would be quite kind of cheap, because they already have the writing process down. Like, they have the stories, they have the concept art already done. So I think that there's several other arcs that they could do a second season of the Save the Clone Wars. Do you know what I mean?
No, totally. Yeah, I don't think that's quite out of the realm of possibility, depending how good it does. And I assume Clone Wars is going to do really well on that streaming service.
So, I mean, we could get the Cad Bane and Boba Fett arc. We could get the Ahsoka walkabout. We could get the Yoda and the Wookiees with the Bad Batch on Kashyyyk.
Yeah.
There's an arc called Return of the Jedi, where Ahsoka comes back to the Jedi Order, and they go into the caverns of the Jedi Temple and they find the Sith Shrine.
Yeah, that one sounds really interesting.
That's the arc that I want to see the most because I think it will have the most force impact.
Mm-hmm.
Like finding a Sith Shrine in a Jedi Temple, that's pretty deep stuff. And there are some scenes in that where it's been described that Ahsoka is basically battling Sidious and trying to hold Sidious at a door.
Yeah, because they showed one of those unfinished story reels, didn't they? For like that moment that showed Sidious kind of like pushing, like I said, they're battling between like a door. You know, like she doesn't discover it, but he pushes her away until she doesn't enter.
Right. See, But
pretty sure that was a story reel.
The thing that is kind of cool is in now today, that sounds like the Sith Shrine is basically connected to the world between worlds, where Sidious is trying to come through the door, and
yeah.
Ahsoka is trying to keep him out of coming into that space, like in the world between worlds, and so like that could be interesting.
Yeah, that's a great connection that they could have if they ever decide to finish that. Yeah, because man, I love a world between worlds. So we get any more connectivity to that would be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, if they wanted to, they could do the Son of Dathomir like in like an actual episode instead of the comics, and they could complete the Dark Disciple episodes. I mean, if you added all those up, I mean, that would at least be another 16 episodes they could do.
Easily, yeah. Yeah, they could easily do probably definitely another season after the seventh one coming up, but they could probably go up to, you know, 8 or 9 if they wanted to. If they did want to finish everything that they had on the table, what was planned. Because then there was another one too where Rex and R2 go on the mission.
Oh yeah, the
together.
Gun arc.
Yeah. Where like clone trooper pilots and like clone trooper ground like soldiers kind of go at it against each other.
Then the second poll question we had was what are you looking forward to most in the Siege of Mandalore? The options I gave were Ahsoka receiving the 332nd Division clones, Ahsoka versus Maul, Order 66, and Mando's in action. And then the results of the poll, 48% of the vote said Order 66. What do you, of those things, what do you think you're looking forward to most?
Yeah, this is a really tough one because honestly, I could just say all of it because all of those things are just, I'm just dying to see. But see, I'm right now debating between Ahsoka versus Maul and Order 66. So, because Ahsoka versus Maul is going to be awesome, and because we already got a tease on that when Darth Maul recognizes her from season 2 finale of Rebels, Trial of the Apprentice. So to see kind of more of that would be awesome. But I'll probably go with Order 66. Just not only for all the reasons that we talk about on this episode, for what makes Order 66 such an impactful moment in Star Wars, but I mean, we got a little tease of it in the Ahsoka novel that came out a few years ago, kind of what Rex and Ahsoka did afterwards.
Yeah.
So to kind of see them experience Order 66, which is, you know, it's going to be really, really cool to see because, again, how we talked about how Clone Wars made more of an impact for Order 66, this is going to add even more to it, I think, knowing the close bond that Ahsoka and Rex had, and Rex maybe harking back to his moment with Fives when he died and seeing it all unfold in front of his eyes is just going to be something really, again, going to use that word tragic, to see Rex seeing his brothers do the unthinkable here and Ahsoka seeing the people she's fought with for several years, you know, do that. It's going to be really probably an emotional moment to see, I think, especially maybe even more so on Rex's front. So that is something I think is going to be really, really fascinating to see unfold. And probably now that I'm talking about it and thinking about it, that is definitely what I want to see most now in the Siege of Mandalore, amongst all the other amazing things that we're going to get in those arcs.
Do you think they could do like a similar Order 66 montage in Siege of Mandalore where it shows other places and other Jedi getting killed by the clones?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think they probably could, but I probably right now say I hope they don't do that, because since we already got that in Revenge of the Sith, it would be kind of cool to see a more centralized, you know, reaction to that happening with Rex and Ahsoka, and just kind of focusing on how they see it, how they process it, and just how it all unfolds, seeing it through their eyes, I think could be, is what we're all really anxious to see. And I would like to have them spend as much time as possible showing us their reaction and the outcome of that. So right now I'm kind of hoping that this plays out with us seeing Order 66 go down with Rex and Ahsoka.
I was just thinking that they could almost do a Kanan, like a Caleb Doom and his masters, like getting killed. Like they could do that in part of the montage. They could show some of the younglings that they had in the youngling arc, and see how they handled it. If they did, like if any of them got killed in Order 66,
yeah, I don't know if I'll be able to handle seeing Gungi get killed.
Oh no! Please no. But like, there are other Jedi that have been in the series that they could show that weren't in the movie, I guess, is just what I was thinking. But you're right. It could like take away from what was happening on Mandalore between Ahsoka and Rex. I really hope that we get to see Rex take out his chip and maybe Wolf or Gregor. I think that would be kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I'm wondering how far in advance they did take it out, like before Order 66 go down. They're like, did they give themselves enough time, or was it like really at the last minute where like, oh man, good thing we got these things out of our heads before we succumbed to that, just like our brothers did.
The thing that I wanted to see most in the Siege of Mandalore is, it's kind of weird. It's Anakin giving Ahsoka the 332nd division. Like,
yeah, that's going to be a great moment.
I think that the reason why is because how personal it is. He's basically giving her half of the 501st, his own division of clones, the people that he trusted and fought with the most, like throughout the Clone Wars. And he's basically repainted them to wear Ahsoka's colors and to reflect who she is. Like they have the fulcrum design, basically Ahsoka's forehead. How much that would mean to Ashley, I think it will make that extremely special, and just I can't wait to see how she acts in that moment. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. I mean, there was that celebration panel they had. Was it the last one in Orlando, or is it Celebration Europe?
I think it was Europe, where Dave is basically telling Ashley real time what happens and how she gets to 332nd, and she's like bawling her eyes out.
Yeah. I mean, she got real emotional just hearing that. So just have that bring that into her performance, I think it's just going to be so awesome to see, like you just said. And going back, there's that, I don't know if it was like official art or an artist rendition, but there's this great piece of art that shows Ahsoka. Yeah, I think it's just fan art, because she has her two lightsabers, the white lightsabers there, where she's like, behind her is Rex and a bunch of those clone troopers with that are reflecting her design on their helmets. It just looks really, really cool. And the fact that we're gonna see that in this animation, man, that's gonna be such an awesome shot if we get anything like that, where it's just Ahsoka leading her own clone troopers with Rex behind her. It's gonna be so, so cool.
Yeah, it will be pretty awesome, and we will get more Maul, so we could see how Maul's tied into the underworld, and maybe they're gonna sow some seeds for the Crimson Dawn or whatever.
Yeah, it's gonna be really interesting too to see if they do plant those seeds. I think that's something they probably would do, because you know, pretty much the next step after Maul here in the Siege of Mandalore is probably him setting up Crimson Dawn. So I think it'd be really cool if they have some little Easter eggs or seed planting there that sets it up.
Cool. So we look forward to that in probably the fall of next year. I think that they will have a lot more information on this at Celebration next April or whatever.
Yeah, I would imagine they probably reveal what the 12 episodes are going to be and just what arcs we're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully maybe have a kind of new trailer that shows, like, you know, montages from all those arcs.
You might get to see the first line, the first arc or whatever.
That's true, yeah. Heck, man, those in attendance might even see the Seat of Mandalore.
Oh, man. Cool. Well, Tim, I want to thank you for taking time to talk to me tonight. Where can people find you online?
Yeah, definitely. It was my pleasure. A lot of fun. I mean, talking clones is something I can do for a long time, so I appreciate the invite. But you can follow me on Twitter. My personal account is at TimG311. And then our Star Wars podcast, Star Wars, The Song Continues. You can follow us there at Star Wars TSC.
It's a very fun podcast that covers the latest news. And Tim and Kyle have a deep passion for gaming. So if you have any questions about Battlefront, they are the guys that will answer your questions.
they
love it passionately, that's for sure.
Yeah, the only downside is that I just haven't had enough time to play it as much as I like to recently. But yeah, Battlefront, it gets a lot of, you know, knocked around these days amongst the gaming community, but in certain instances, rightfully so. But man, the game is still fun when you just get down and enjoy playing, you know, these large scale battles in the Star Wars universe. And with the new consoles out now looking as better than any Star Wars game probably ever has, it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, totally. Now it's time to hear from you, the listeners. How has the Domino Squad changed your understanding of the clones? You can email us your thoughts at moonjockeyspodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the podcast at moonjockeyspod. You can follow me at ballsinplay. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, may the Force be with you, always.
Push the button, Chewie.